This is Dr. Holly Lucille's Mindful Medicine. Here's Dr. Holly Lucille.
Hi, folks. Thank you so much for spending part of your day with us here at Mindful Medicine. You know, I have to tell you, I'm probably sure everybody that's listening has been affected by addiction in one way or another, whether it's yourself that has struggled or you know a family member or a loved one. Certainly recovering from active addiction is a lifelong journey and it can take many paths, but I have somebody with me today that's going to actually talk about applying the principles of yoga for tools in recovery. I'm going to just get right to it, all right? So I have the lovely Kitsky Hawk, and she wrote this beautiful book. It's sitting right in front of me, A Guide for Working the 12 Steps for Recovery. It's called Yogic Tools. I'm just going to bring you on. Kitsky, thanks for being here.
Oh, thank you for having me. I'm excited to share about this book.
Yeah, well, I've had a chance to look through it, and it is really riveting. I mean, it's, you know, I love that you're on Mindful Medicine, right? Because I think you have, we have listed here one thing. Now, I'm actually on the advisory board of the Complementary Therapies in Medicine, which is a journal. And current findings, this was from an article in 2013, current findings increasingly support yoga and mindfulness as promising complementary, as promising complementary therapies for addictive behaviors. We're seeing it in the research now. So tell me a little bit about, how this book came about.
The book came about because I was using yoga more and more with the women that I sponsored in recovery. I am a woman in recovery. I became a yoga practitioner in about my 15th year of recovery and have pursued actively the combination of yoga in the recovery process. So once you kind of get settled into a routine life in recovery, there comes a point when the mental processes are no longer sufficient for complete healing. And yoga is a healing technology, not an exercise program. So we use the philosophy of yoga to drop into the body using the tools like breath and meditation and the postures, but also the language of looking inside to help us find our real selves and also to find that sensation. You know, when you hear something that's true for you and you kind of feel like a bong, you know, there's just like a settling of your tissues as you hear something that's true for you, to increase your awareness of those sensations so you can come to your truth.
Yes. Yeah. Oprah calls it the light bulb. She made the light bulb.
Yeah.
Aha. I want you to repeat what you said about yoga, that it's not an exercise program. It is a what? Say that again.
A healing technology.
Obviously,
it's a, you're given ethics and values, non-harming, non-lying, non-stealing, non-excess, non-attachment, and you're given some values like cleanliness, purity of relationship, as well as your body and your surroundings, contentment, self-study, discipline, and surrender. And then you're given the postures, and then you're given the breath practices, and then you're given the concept of concentration, and then meditation, and then you can find that union of body, mind, and spirit, you with yourself, with all other living beings, and with your higher power.
So yoga, okay, so I want to get serious about this because it's a serious subject, and I also think it's a really riveting way of being able to help people through recovery and relapse. But I want you to come down here to Los Angeles with a foghorn and shout to all of these ladies that are, you know, trying to, you know, beat each other out for parking spaces and yoga mat space and tell them that yoga is not an exercise program, that it's a healing technology. I really do. I want that. I want to blast that out. This will definitely be a highlight of this interview for me because people, have turned it into something perhaps that it's not. And I love that you say that.
But I know, beer yoga, goat yoga, please. You know, I don't know why. I think it was thought that the only way the Westerner could understand yoga was just to look at it like acrobatics or calisthenics.
Right.
And
well,
I know that we are deeper, and the yearning of anyone suffering from any addiction, whether it's smoking or sex or gambling or drugs, alcohol, opioids, there is something, some connection inside that's missing.
Yeah.
And with so real yoga, you can be introduced to that connection.
And you can get that connection and connect back with yourself. But how do you define addiction?
Addiction is an unnatural relationship with a substance or a process that includes not being able to cease that behavior or that substance when you want to and having it negatively impact your life. The most comprehensive written definition comes through American Society of Addiction Medicine. And it's just a beautiful description. But that's anything that impairs your life.
Yeah.
And you know, because in the back of your mind saying, God, tomorrow I'm not going to.
Yeah.
Or I wish I hadn't.
Yeah, of course. And so you wrote this book to complement the 12-step. And obviously, this 12-step program when it comes to addiction and recovery is very popular. Please explain how the 12 steps program, like sort of what it is, just for people that need to be reminded or don't know, and how it helps addicts to recover.
Okay. First, it's admitting out loud that thing that you whispered to yourself in the dark of night, I can't control this.
Yeah.
And then to say, I believe that control is possible, that letting go of whatever attachment I have to this process or substance, letting go of that is possible, and that I can't do it alone. And then there's some steps that investigate the unlovely behaviors that we have participated in and identify them, come to a point where we're willing to change these behaviors. Also, to make apology and change our behavior and our relationship with people that we've harmed, continuing to take a life of introspection, meditation, prayer, and to take these principles, the useful ones, out into your everyday life, and if possible, help someone else.
More with Dr. Holly Lucille coming up. But first, I want to tell you about Health IQ, an insurance company that helps health-conscious people like runners, cyclists, weightlifters, and vegetarians get lower rates on their life insurance. Yes, I'm not kidding. This is really cool. Health IQ can save you up to 33% because physically active people have a 56% lower risk of heart disease, 20% lower risk of cancer, and a 58% lower risk of diabetes compared to people who are inactive. And these savings are exclusive to Health IQ. Now, you have to qualify by taking a Health IQ quiz or other lifestyle quizzes like the cycling IQ or running IQ quiz. And you can also get additional savings by submitting actual data such as race results from a 5K that you've run. And Health IQ doesn't just take this info and pass it on to an insurer. They are with you every step of the way, from interest to application through underwriting to the final policy enforcement. It's pretty cool. Now, by being healthy, you not only live a better life, but now you can also pay less for your life insurance. To see if you qualify, get your free quote today at healthiq.com/mindful or mention the promo code MINDFUL when you talk to a Health IQ agent. Once again, check it out at healthiq.com/mindful. Now back to Dr. Holly Lucille.
Yeah, that's always the best place when you can get well enough yourself and you can give back and continue to sort of help others and contribute to the community. I love that. So how does yoga philosophy then complement these 12 steps?
Well, I gave the really quick view of what we call the yamas and the niyamas, which are the restraints and the observances, what I mentioned as non-harming, non-lying, non-stealing, etc.
Right.
Those concept really back up the principles behind the steps and the traditions in the 12 steps. It's built into the steps. Once you've done the steps in the program specific way, you know, the program that you're involved in, which is kind of an intellectual storytelling process, you still haven't addressed what's stuck in the body. So not only is a practice of yoga, the asana, very, very useful, and I mean gentle, slow, mindful, pay attention to what your body is experiencing, not quick, let's blast it through, burn 250 calories at 103 degrees. That's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about mindful movement.
Yeah.
I do have an opinion.
Yes. Well, obviously I have an opinion too, so we're on the same opinion page there. I get that. I understand.
Yeah. But, you know, harnessing the power of the breath to bring on that tend and befriend part of our nervous system, that rest and digest, the parasympathetic nervous system. Because when you have trauma lodged in your body, most likely you're stuck in the on position where adrenaline and cortisol are running through your body. Yoga has a way to address all of this and to give you words to describe where in the body you might encounter your past sensations, blockages, and energy stuckness. So the body can be a great map to coming toward full heart, mind, body, spirit integration.
And I think this is such important. This is such an important concept when it comes to healing from addiction, because, you know, whole body medicine, that whole treating the whole person, I think is pivotal. Because yes, addiction can be physiological. It can be, you know, it can, as you defined, it can be so much. And I think it's so slippery when it comes to relapse, or, and there's so many contributing factors that, you know, that are layered into why somebody becomes an addict, and unraveling these all in this whole body perspective and using yoga, it just seems, I mean, because people can go to meetings and they can be abstinent from their substance. But this just seems like you're helping people go a little bit deeper, making that connection with themselves, reconnecting with themselves, and healing quite a bit, talking about yogic tools for recovery. So, you know, you had a beautiful definition of addiction. And I think it probably really sort of resonated with a lot of my listeners. But you mentioned this word co-addiction. What's that?
Mm-hmm. Well, before I drank, I was a co-addict. I had a mom who was an alcoholic. And so all of my behavior was designed in reference to keeping her okay and stable. Co-addict is someone whose life has been impacted by someone who drinks or uses or has affairs or is always at work and never emotionally available, any of these behaviors that cause isolation. A co-addict is someone who defines their own being in reference to another person. So I'm going to control my all. I'm going to control my siblings or my children. If my husband were drinking, I would control my children. I would control everything I could so that the addict or the drinker would, fill in the blank, be nice, be calm, not need to drink, come home, you know, not yell at us, not be violent. So any behavior that we do over and over again affects our brain, the development of our brain. And in fact, changes the brain in much the same way an addict's brain gets changed in the dopamine centers, not to get too technical.
Mm-hmm.
But a co-addict
right.
has developed behaviors that change the brain. Total
and
loss
so
of self.
A co-addict
no
probably,
sense of self.
Yeah, it's no sense of self and then sort of sets yourself up for being an addict themselves.
Yes, yes. Or to enter into a relationship with another addict. So, you know, my choices, which is unreal. I didn't have a choice, but either I could have become an addict. I mean, one of the paths I could have taken is to become an addict, which is what happened with me. or to marry one.
Right.
Or to
because
drop
that's
out
familiar. Or, you know, it's comfortable.
Yeah. Very familiar. Yeah. You don't know any other way. You don't recognize any other way. And in fact, you might not be in a place where you could emotionally tolerate anything else.
Right. Sure. Now, there's one term in your book, kosha, K-O-S-H-A. Mm-hmm. What does it mean, and how does knowing about it help us? Tell our listeners.
Koshas are, think of Russian nesting dolls. They're the layers of our mm-hmm. being. So we have our physical layer, mm-hmm. you know, the physical body inside and outside of our body. But we also have an energetic layer. Think of our heartbeat, our electrical system, but also the level of our energy that gives us our get up and go during the day or flags at night, our energetic layer. We have our psycho-emotional layer, that part that has recorded our experiences and makes decisions based upon those raw experiences, you know, until we teach it differently. Then we have our intellect, our wisdom body, that part that knows about all these other bodies. It's our judgment, our wisdom, our observer. And then we have a spiritual body, that part that connects us to the universe, that part that wants us to be part of a part of humanity, so our connections. So that's the physical body, energetic body, the psycho-emotional, the wisdom, and the spiritual bodies.
Mm-hmm.
So if I get up in the morning and I'm feeling off, I can pause and say, well, am I feeling cruddy? Like, do I have like a bit of a headache and a stomach ache? Is it my physical body? Is my energy flagging? Are my feelings, is my emotional landscape feeling tender because of a dream or maybe because of what's coming up through the day? Am I being judgmental rather than discerning? And have I become disconnected from my fellow man, from my spiritual life? What exactly do I need to take care of in order to feel more integrated?
Well, what a way to get started in the morning. I mean, I think that certainly would help anybody not relapse, because I think that disconnection and that not having contact with yourself, and you blow through your day, perhaps getting started with an alarm that then leads you to look at a text message or the 17 emails that came through at night or 17,000 emails that came through at night. And then you go off into your day with somebody else's to-do list and not your own. And you haven't done your little scan as far as how are you feeling. There's anything that could happen, anything. And I think that sounds so lovely if people could just understand about that and then start and think about it. Because I've always said, you know, knowledge is power, but self-knowledge is superpower. And if we started out through our day knowing like, hey, I might be a little off today, it's like you've got this power to watch your triggers, watch your environment, take care of yourself, consciously breathe, mindfully move, all of those things, because you know that you are either underslept, that you're off from a dream, that, you know, an anniversary is coming up, that you had a conversation that's still sort of weighing on your heart, but you know because you checked in and you're able to.
Yes, yes, yes. I love the self-knowledge is superpower.
Yeah. I love that too. I was like, I'm giving a talk in Grand Rapids, Michigan later on in February. And it's basically that. It's like knowledge is power, but self-knowledge is superpower. And it's going to be great. Well,
yeah.
Keetsky Hawk, I am so thrilled about this book and your recovery and your journey, and that you are giving back and sharing with all of us. I mean, this is truly, this book, I think, embraces the recovery emotionally, spiritually, viscerally, from the inside out. And listeners, you can go and learn more at www.yogarecovery.com. And then you do have a Facebook page, which is facebook.com/your name, which is spelled K-Y-C-Z-Y. That's Keetsky Hawk. Thank you so much for your time, and thank you so much for your work and for being here.
Thank you. This has been lovely. I appreciate
it. Yeah. Bye-bye. All right, mindful listeners, I appreciate your time and spending some of your day with us. And remember, we're just trying to open up our minds. This is yoga that isn't a exercise program. We've got yogic tools for recovery, and we're talking about using yoga as a healing technology. It's a fascinating book. All right, until next time. Okay. Well.